Well, thank you and good afternoon, everyone. One of Paul Keating's advisors likes to tell this story about how they were sitting in his office one day and there was the sound of a branch snapping in the background somewhere. And as it turns out, that snapping was actually the economy that was buckling under the weight of the 17% cash rate the Reserve Bank had just put in place at the time. And of course, it was followed in short order by the recession that we had to have. Now, in some ways, what we've seen in recent months is some similarities. We've seen a very rapid turnaround from late last year, where there were still generally positive views about the Australian economy, to one now, where the pessimism abounds. So some similarities to what we saw back then. So the question for economists is really, well, has that economic branch just snapped again? Is the sort of gloom that's out there right now actually justified? Now, it's fair to say that, as I say, pessimism has lifted. There's no doubt about that. But the reality is, though, the Australian economy is still in its 28th year of expansion. And if I'd spent the last 28 years on Mars and flew in this morning and asked an economist to give me an update on the Australian economy, well, they probably would have showed me a chart like this one here. And what it shows is, despite the slowdown in GDP growth that we saw at the end of last year, it's kind of around the average level that we've seen over the last few years. It's still a long way from zero, of course. I would also see on this chart that the unemployment rate has steadily moved lower. It's now around about the 5% level that we regard as full employment for Australia. And I'd also note that inflation remains pretty much dead in the water. And I can move beyond these standard indicators and tell you commodity prices are high enough. They're generating significant amounts of income for the Australian economy right now. Our budget deficit's disappearing at a rate of knots. We've got scope to do something with economic policy if necessary as well. All of these things are good things and is actually quite a handy starting point as we launch ourselves into 2019. Nevertheless, as I've said, the pessimism has lifted, and what we've seen, as you can see on the chart here, is a significant dropping off in measures of business confidence over the last 6 months. And we've seen consumer confidence, the green line on that chart, become very, very, very volatile. There appears to be two main drivers on this front. There's an increased concern about the global economic backdrop, and there's plenty there to worry about. I mean, take your pick, trade wars, slower growth in China, the mess that is Brexit. I mean, the list there just goes on and on. So plenty of reasons to worry about that global backdrop. Domestically, most of the concerns seem to relate to that combination of high levels of household debt, weak income growth, and, of course, falling dwelling prices and the risks that poses to the consumer part of the story. Now, of course, this pessimism was given a further kick along last week when we had a very weak set of economic growth numbers, the GDP figures for the end of 2018, and they suggest that there was a very significant slowdown in the Australian economy in the second half of last year. In fact, I've collected some key numbers here, and if you look at the top row of those numbers, I mean, what they're saying is the rate of growth in the economy slowed from around about 4% in the first half of the year down to about 1% in the second half, and that's a pretty sharp pullback, whatever way you look at it. The eagle-eyed commentators out there noticed that economic growth has slowed below population growth, and so we're able to get all those headlines out there about there being a GDP per capita recession underway in Australia right now. I would have to say, though, if this is a recession, it's one of the strangest recessions I've ever seen, because if you run your eye down the other numbers in that chart, at the same time the economy apparently hit the wall, we've seen a pickup in jobs growth, we've seen a step down in the unemployment rate, we've seen our terms of trade, which is what really drives the national income in Australia, grow strongly. We're very close to producing a budget surplus, partly because of that. And we've even seen some modest pickups in wages and prices coming through. So these are not the things you would expect to see in a recession. And you need to bear that in mind, I think, when you're interpreting the current state of play in the economy. Our policymakers have recognised what is going on here, and we have seen what I like to call the return of the two-handed central banker. Now, economists are always criticised for having two hands, but discovered central bankers are in much the same camp here in the sense that most of them last year were telling us that interest rates were going up, and some, like the Fed in the US, were actually delivering that, but they're now much more ambivalent about the outlook. So if I look at in Australia's case, the governor of the Reserve Bank is now telling us, well, there are scenarios where interest rates can go up. Equally, there are scenarios where interest rates may move lower in Australia. And that's about as even-handed, as about two-handed as you can possibly be in terms of economic policy guidance. It's fair to say that we have moved, when we're thinking about the global backdrop, from a sustained synchronised upturn that was delivering lots of benefits for the global economy over the last few years, to one where economic growth now is much more uneven, and you hear a lot of talk about desynchronised global growth. And that certainly seems to be the case. I mean, if we look at the set of charts here, the first chart, there's what they call an economic surprise index. So it measures, is global economic data printing higher than people expect or lower? Well, the readings there are below zero at the moment. The global economy is turning out numbers, results that are much weaker than people expected to see. We move to the middle channel because of the middle panel, the mixed messages coming from central banks around the world has seen uncertainty about the direction of global policy move up to near record highs. So now these things are obviously telling you about the degree of uncertainty about the global economic backdrop. The flow through to Australia so far seems reasonably muted, and the final panel in that set shows the results of one of the business surveys that the CBA sponsors, and in particular it's looking at what's happening with export orders received by Australian companies. And the way to read that chart, anything above 50 means expansion. So despite that global uncertainty, despite the slowdown we have seen in some countries like China, our export performance is actually holding up quite well at the moment. Of course, on that front, I would just highlight that only last week we saw the Chinese government take steps to inject some very significant stimulus into their own economy. And of course, a strong Chinese economy, it's good for commodity prices, it's good for commodity demand, and by extension, it's good for Australia as well. And if I turn back to the domestic story, I think it's fair to say that despite the concerns about the outlook, a fair amount of bottom line economic growth in Australia is guaranteed at the moment, in a sense, by the nature of the underlying drivers. And again, I've just picked out a selection of charts here. So in the first panel, all those big LNG plants are ramping up, they're producing gas, we're exporting it, and that's got further to run. And we're going to get that impact on growth coming through over the next 12 to 18 months, helping drive the bottom line. If you move to the middle panel, government infrastructure spending, well, there's pretty much infrastructure boom everywhere in Australia right now. It's all concentrated largely in transport projects, multi-year projects that have started. Because they start and they go through to completion, we'll get the boost to growth and activity coming through from that. And the final panel there, looking at another part of the Asian story, if you like, per capita income in Asia is now above the global average for the first time. And if you multiply that by the 3.5 billion people in Asia, then you've got a very, very powerful spending force that's reshaping parts of the Australian economic story. And you can see it particularly in areas like tourism and education, but also other areas like food are getting benefits from here. And this is a demographic story. It's going to continue, and again, it's going to continue to help to drive growth in the bottom line for Australia. I can also tell you that some of the risks I talked about 12 months ago, that this event looked to have receded. So what we were concerned about back then, amongst other things, was the very weak wages growth we were seeing and the lack of appetite by businesses in Australia to lift their capital spending. But when I show you the set of charts here, where you can see there has been a bit of a modest lift in wages growth starting to come through on the chart on the left-hand side there, and some very strong growth in business capex, you see on the chart on the right, with all the leading indicators there pointing to more to come. So some of those risks have receded. Now, the extent to where I think there is some genuine concerns about the Australian economic story and where the risks clearly have lifted is that it comes down to, as I said at the start, that combination of high household debt, falling house prices, and income growth that's still pretty soft overall. Now, a lot of these issues have actually been in play for a long time. I mean, we've worried about high levels of household debt in Australia since last century. We've worried about an overvalued housing market since at least 2004 on my estimates, and wages growth has been weak for 4 or 5 years now. So there's nothing new in a sense. What is new, though, I think, is we're starting to see some of the impact of decisions that was made a few years ago to try and solve and reduce some risks to do with financial stability. So the regulators were very worried about there being too much investor activity in the housing market, too much interest-only lending going into the housing market as well. So various rules and regulations were put in place to reduce that that risk. And they've been very successful, but I think they've done it partly by transforming what was a financial stability risk into a macroeconomic risk. And you can get an idea of just how big the changes have been by looking at this chart. It shows you the composition of the CBA housing book. So out of all that housing debt out there, you can see there's been a large drop in the percentage of it that's interest-only. There's been a large drop in it, the amount of it that's out there to investors. Well, how do you do this? Well, a lot of those people with interest-only loans now have principal and interest loans, and what they've discovered, of course, as they take out those loans is that the repayments are going up by 30 to 40%. Now, of course, there's no way their income growth is covering that increase, and to the extent that people pay their mortgage first, it just means they have less money to spend elsewhere in the economy, and so we've seen some downside risks build to the consumer spending part of the story because of this this compositional shift. And it's certainly something that we can pick up in the surveys we do of our customer base. We look at the activities of around about 6 million people who are CBA customers each month, and I've just pulled out in this chart here some high-level indications of what's happening amongst that sample of 6 million people. Well, the green line, that's effectively the consumer spending line, and you can see the slowdown that's occurred towards the end of the chart there as these sort of issues bite. The other line to note, of course, is the red line there. Wealth is now declining courtesy of lower house prices in Australia, and of course that generates a new set of risks into the consumer story as well. And what we're seeing there, I think, is, well, you think back to that previous chart, that big drop in the share of activity by investors. What it really means is we've taken a big chunk of demand out of the Australian housing market, and like any other market, if you take some demand out, then you're going to see prices adjust. So I think you can trace the initial falls in house prices back to this sort of regulatory-driven decision to reduce financial stability risks. You can get an impression of what's going on, I think, here. This chart shows you house prices, but they're broken up into the pink line there, which shows you what's happening in those areas that are dominated by investor activity in the housing market, the blue line being the rest of the market. Well, you can see initially that the falls were in that investor-driven segment. The good news in that, in a sense, is it means there aren't these huge imbalances in the Australian housing market that would validate those 30% falls in house prices that some people want to forecast. But of course, once prices do start falling, it does generate its own momentum, and we've seen prices continue to fall over and above what the regulation itself would have suggested. And of course, that is a new risk in the economic story as well. We think prices have further to fall. We're not at the bottom just yet. And I think everybody in this room will certainly know the story. Most of those price falls that we've seen so far have been concentrated in Sydney and Melbourne. They had the biggest price rises, of course, on the way up, so it's not surprising that we're seeing that right now. But these are also the areas with the strongest demographics. So you know, if you're adding 125,000 people a year to Melbourne, then at some point that injection of demand is going to stabilise prices. As I said, are we are there yet? Not quite. On our views, we think the peak-to-trough fall in prices in Melbourne will be about 12 to 13%. If those numbers are right, then we're kind of two-thirds of the way through the process. Now, I'm always positive by inclination, so that, you know, the one sort of positive indicator I can show you on this part of the story is the chart on the right-hand side here, where the red line shows you what's happening with the hit rate on the home loan part of the CBA website. Now, it probably tells you something about what economists do in their spare time, but the... the point is, though, that hit rate has stabilised, and it's kind of a loose correlation, but it is there. And typically, when we see that stability, that turnaround come through, 3 or 4 months later, house price momentum starts to move in the same direction. That's pretty tentative. I will stress that. But as I say, I do like to highlight some of the positive in this story. The negatives are only too clear. Now, I said I think demographics is what saves the story here in the end, but you can have whatever population growth that you like, but if you can't get a home loan, then that demand is kind of irrelevant. It's not real demand as far as the housing market is concerned. So there's been a lot of debate about whether there is a house price or housing credit crunch underway in Australia. Are the banks reluctant to lend? Are they producing worse outcomes because of that? Well, again, I think most of the story here actually has to do with weakness in demand rather than any restriction on supply. And again, I've picked out a few indicators from the CBA book that highlights the point, and I'll just talk about the first panel on that, that chart. What it actually shows you is the loan approval rate. So what percentage of loan applications actually go through to funding? Now, it's done as an index, but the point is that it's basically a flat line. So it's telling you that the approval rate today isn't really different from what it was a year or two ago. So if there's any weakness in credit growth, it's more to do with the lack of demand rather than the banks having turned off the taps. So it's very important, again, when you're thinking about the risks in this this part of the story. Nevertheless, though, house prices are falling, and as I showed you one of those earlier charts, it means housing wealth in Australia is also declining at the moment. So it does raise this risk of a negative wealth effect. A household's going to cut back their consumer spending even further so they can rebuild their savings and offset that loss of housing wealth is the direction of risk. Well, it's actually quite hard to see any kind of positive wealth effect from when prices were rising. And because of that, we thought it's quite unlikely that you'll see any kind of negative effect now that prices are actually falling. But given that, though, what is a little bit concerning then is this chart. It shows you what's happening with various components of consumer lending. And you can see in that period since house prices started to fall, they have showed or slowed very, very sharply. So again, you know, here is a risk that's playing out in the consumer space, and one to watch very closely. What would help? Well, clearly, a pickup in wages growth would help. And as I mentioned earlier, we do appear to be seeing part of that. The other thing that would help is that we know, courtesy of rising terms of trade and rising commodity prices behind that, that the government is awash with cash at the moment. We're very close to producing a budget surplus. We'll no doubt see that when the Commonwealth budget comes down in a few weeks' time. But it means, we think, that there's plenty of room there to give us some income tax cuts. And that would certainly help with this part of the story, of course. And it would be kind of a more targeted response, in a sense, to where the weakness in Australia is right now than the interest rate cuts that a lot of commentators are starting to forecast. So fiscal policy is probably the policy option we should be following most closely at the moment. I'll stop at that point. And while there's obviously plenty of reasons for the gloom that we're seeing now, hopefully I've kind of left you with the impression that that gloom is in fact overdone. Thank you.